Golf Smarter number 221 for March 9, 2010.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
The Art of the Mental Game with Dr. Joseph Parent.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for downloading the Golf Smarter podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Golf Smarter for members only. This is a complete free episode, but next week and every other week we have our members only episodes. That's only available once you have access to our archives. I remind you of this fact because starting with this show and over the next four episodes, we have two guests who are each sticking around for two shows. This and next week, an old friend of Golf Smarter, Dr. Joseph Parent, who also teaches at the Ojai Valley Inn and Spa Resort in Ojai, California. And after we spend a few weeks with Dr. Joe, our next guest may provide some of the most interesting and compelling content I think we've had on Golf Smarter in a long, long time. PGA Touring playing veteran Andrew McGee will join us to talk about his career and provide us with an insider's view of life on the PGA Tour. Become a member today and get the full Golf Smarter experience by logging into golfsmarter.com. Today's conversation with Dr. Joseph Parent, author of Zen Golf and Zen Putting, and his new book, which we will talk about, is 36 minutes long. And next week, he answers a number of questions about the mental game that came in from listeners. And that one is 45 minutes long. So let's just get going and say welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast, Dr. Joe.
Good morning, Fred. How are you?
I'm so well and so happy to have you back on the show. It's been a long time, but not your first appearance. To people who've not been listening to Golf Smarter for a while, Dr. Joe was the very first episode of the Golf Smarter podcast way back at the end of 2005. And have been back multiple times. It's always great to have you back on the show because we get a lot of requests for your content.
Thanks a lot, Fred. I appreciate that.
And we're excited to talk about a new book that you have just released called Golf, The Art of the Mental Game, 100 Classic Golf Tips. Let's start the format of the book. It's different than what you've done in the past.
That's true. I met a gentleman who owns the rights to the drawings by perhaps the premier golf illustrator, Anthony Ravielli, the person who did the drawings for the Ben Hogan book, Five Lessons, that classic instruction book with the famous pane of glass illustration and all of the line drawings that show Ben Hogan in almost photographic detail. Mm-hmm. It's really beautiful. And he approached me to put together my lessons with the Ravielli drawings.
Wow.
So I had access to the full collection of Ravielli golf drawings, and it was an interesting process. There were some that really spoke to lessons that I'd given, some of which are presented at length in Zen Golf and Zen Putting. So I condensed some of those down to one-page tips to pair with the drawing. So each drawing is opposite a one-page golf tip. So there are 100 drawings, 100 pages of tips. Now, about two-thirds of it, I saw some of the drawings, and they reminded me of lessons that I'd given that I hadn't written down, and so I was able to craft one-page tips that matched those drawings. So it was a little bit of matching drawings to my lessons, and then lessons to the drawings.
Interesting. And did you have more than 100 images to work from?
Yes, there were probably 300 images in all to work from.
Oh, my goodness. And these were done when? When did Ravielli do these?
Ravielli did these from the 1950s all the way up through the time of his death, which was in the 1990s. So it's a 40-year collection. Some of the drawings are old-time golfers that people might not recognize, and then there are very recognizable faces like Tom Watson and Ben Hogan.
Right. Yeah, there's definitely some that look a little more modern than others. And like number 18 specifically jumped out at me. Are these just golf people that he did, or are they just like sometime maybe, you know, public figures in the entertainment industry or anything else? Do you know?
All of the people in the book are golfers.
Okay.
Most of them professional golfers, some of them famous amateur golfers.
Oh.
But the golf, there aren't any non-golf celebrities in the book.
Okay, because I don't know, it's you know, when you say amateur golfers in the days that he was doing this, amateur golf was a much different entity than it is today. I mean, they were valued, amateur golfers had much greater value in the public eye.
And much greater sports world celebrity. You
yeah,
don't know very much
yeah.
about amateur golfers nowadays, but in those days, they held status like the pros. And there are several pictures.
Well, Bobby Jones is a classic
Bobby Jones
example.
In there.
Right.
That's exactly
He's a classic example of someone who never went pro, but was a very famous golfer in his day.
Correct.
Yeah. No, because exactly. This image, I thought it looked like. At first glance, it looked like Walt Disney, but it wasn't. But let's talk about number 18 for just a second, because like you had mentioned, these are one-page tips.
Correct.
All through the book, numbered 1 through 100, and each associated with a different image. And the images are beautiful, and it gives the book such a classic feel to it. In a
exactly.
way, it looks like you pick up Ben Hogan's book. Oh, I've never seen this before, but clearly it's been around for a while. This book looked like it's been around. It's got that classic feel that any golfer, I really believe that any golfer can have this any room in the house, and it'll be worthwhile having. You can have
you
can have
really
it in the guest bathroom. You could have it in the kitchen. You could have it in the family room. You can have it in the living room. You can have it next to your bed. You can actually have it in the passenger seat of your car when you're going and you pull up to a golf course. You just pull one out and go, oh, yeah, I need to remember this.
Well, a lot of golfers have told me that this book and Zen Golf and Zen Putting, they often say, I have your book on my bedside table.
Yep.
And read a chapter before I go to bed each night. So that's very gratifying. And this really was designed to be both an instruction book and an art book. It's published by Rizzoli, who is a very well-known art book publisher in New York City. That's why this is a combination. And I just think the drawings are beautiful, and it was an honor for me to be able to have my tips paired with such an illustrious illustrator.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's really fabulous. And as I was reading through it, the stuff was just hit right on for me, so much of it. I mean, I loved the book Zen Golf. It was pivotal in my golf career, so much so that when I had the concept of doing the Golf Smarter podcast, I wanted to talk about, you know, to me, the Golf Smarter idea and Zen Golf was all the same thing. And I just wanted to have you on the show, because frankly, after doing over 200 Golf Smarter episodes now with a lot of different mental coaches on the show, as I was reading through Golf, The Art of the Mental Game, I just went to myself. I said, that's why you're the doctor.
Well, thank you, Chris.
Because
thank
your stuff is so right on. It is so good. Oh,
well, thank
so
you very much.
So let's go back to number 18 is
yes.
make sure.
Make sure.
Tell me
the
story.
Two words that I like least in golf, because they just set you up for so much additional tension and manipulation. Make sure you get this one to the hole, and what people, it almost always creates an exaggeration. Make sure you get it to the hole. They hit it 6 feet by. I said, well, you did a really good job of getting it to the hole. Make sure you don't go left. Everybody bails out to the right. Mm-hmm. Make sure. It is always a command. It's pressure. It carries with it an unspoken two words after make sure. Make sure you do X, Y, or Z, or else you will suffer the consequences. So this, whenever there's an or else, but danger or doom. So that's behind it. That's in there. That's the shadow of make sure is or else.
And it's just additional pressure.
Additional pressure and forcing you to do something rather than the shot as a whole, you're focusing on just one part of it, and therefore everything gets out of proportion. So when you say, this is a downhill putt, make sure you don't hit it too hard, it kind of dribbles and wobbles down there and doesn't really have a chance to go in the hole.
Okay, so how?
Rather than make sure, why not a positive image of what you do want to do rather than it's usually a make sure you do something and avoid the or else. So instead of saying make sure you don't go left, why don't we pick a target somewhere on the right side of the green or the right side of the fairway and say let's do our best to put it there. You see, do your best is something anybody can do. Make sure means that you have to do it perfectly, and almost nobody can do that. Why not take something that you can do, and then people have a lot more confidence, they have a lot more relaxation, and it lets the swing or the stroke flow by itself rather than you feeling you have to control and manipulate it. When I have my golf programs and I ask people to raise their hand if they've never guided or steered a shot, nobody raises their hand. So then I say, and how many of you had a better result when you guided or steered a shot? Almost never. So what we want to do is, and this is basically the message of Zen golf as well as Zen putting and the art of the mental game, get out of your own way and let yourself make the best swing, the best stroke that you can without make sure it comes out a particular way, make sure you avoid a disastrous result.
But for those folks, and I'm not one of them, but for those folks who are so competitive, I'm highly competitive against myself, but I don't play competitive golf. I even kind of notch it down a little bit when I'm involved in a charity tournament and we got to win. You know, I was recently down in Scottsdale and playing a celebrity am, and we had our foursome, and these were hackers. These guys, you know, we were all about the same or worse than me. But there was, in our foursome was a fifth player who was a playing professional. And this guy, Andrew McGee, has played for many, many years in the PGA Tour and has PGA Tour victories. And
Andrew's
like
a great guy.
Great guy, and he'll be on the show soon, I hope. But he's very competitive, and he's playing with these four hackers who just are begging for a par. That's all that they could hope for on any given day. And if they get a birdie in a round, we're ecstatic. And he's sitting there, come on, we got to get a birdie. We've got, you know, and he's very competitive. He pushes himself. So, and I don't want to ask, how do you get someone like that to back off on a competitive side or with his teammates? But how does he not push himself over the brink on being too difficult, on being too, you know where I'm going with that?
Yes, I do. And I like the saying, it's time to stop shoulding all over yourself.
Hey.
So all of these shoulds and have to's, and that's where the chapter make sure comes in of changing the perspective of what you're trying to accomplish, because all of this is about results and results oriented. We have to get a birdie. Make sure you don't miss this putt. All of those kinds of things. What we want to do is turn that competitive fire towards execution, towards process, towards putting the club on the ball the way you want to, and then whatever happens after that happens. Being able to tune into the process and not let worry about the results interfere with the quality of the execution. I'll tell you a little story about a lesson that I did. A player was out for a golfer was out for a playing lesson at the Ojai Valley Inn Resort where I teach. It's a beautiful place. It's a George Thomas golf course, the same guy who designed L.A. Country Club and Bel Air and Riviera.
Oh, yeah, it's a beautiful course. You and I played there together once.
We have barrancas, these ravines that are filled with trees and brush. And this one hole, there was a long carry over the barranca. And this fellow was hitting these kind of very guidey, weak pop slices for the last few holes. And he said, I want to play the back tees where there's this long carry. And it's a much more beautiful view from there. But I said, I think we should go up and play the members tees. And he said, I really want to play back here. And I said, well, okay, if you do, you have to do exactly what I say. He said, well, you're the teacher, so of course I'm going to do what you say. Well, but you have to, I said, you have to mean this. Okay, I want you to walk up to the ball. And he's being very protective of his Pro V1s. You know, he's playing these expensive golf balls, and you'd think they were made of gold, not just $5 each. Okay, but so he's making these very guiding little swings, afraid to lose his ball. I said, I want you to walk up to your ball. I want you to say, I don't care if I never see you again. I am making a free swing. So he said, okay, and he started his address. I said, no, I want you to say it out loud to the golf ball and mean it. So he says, okay. He walks to his golf ball. He says, I don't care if I never see you again. I'm making a free swing. He then goes through his routine, and he rips one. And it's got this penetrating trajectory, and it even turns over a little bit. He said, where did that come from? I said, that was there all along. You were trying to make sure you didn't lose your golf ball, so you were hitting these little weak, guidey kinds of swings and not just swinging freely and releasing the club naturally. So rather than make sure you release the club, which usually produces a nice little snap hook, all we were doing was getting him out of his own way and being able to swing freely without worry about how the shot is going to turn out. That's where you direct your competitive fire towards quality of your routine, quality of process, quality of your execution. And then wherever it goes, and you deal with it.
A huge lesson, process over results. Huge.
And that is actually one of the titles of the chapters in here. I think it's, yeah, number three, process over result.
There you go.
Have a look. And in this chapter, I mean, I'm just going to read you something very brief from here, and it's the four-step process.
Okay.
One. Choose a target that'll leave you in the position you want without too much risk of landing in trouble. Two, have a good image of the shot you want to play to that target. Three, feel the swing you want to make to produce that image. And four, commit to that swing. Keep a smooth flow through your routine and address and a good tempo through your swing. Take care of the process in that way, and the results will take care of themselves.
Beautiful. So good. This book is so good. I like short things like this. It plays up to my attention span very well. So just reading something and being able to, you know, what I like about that is I can read it and then absorb it. I can sit back. I don't have to worry about getting to the next chapter, you know, like I'm not going to be missing something that's going on in the story, that I can just read this and ponder it and sit on it and think about it. And that's
well,
what
that's
I really like
how
about this book.
That's really how it was designed, and Zen Golf was the same way. Zen Golf is 2 to 3 page chapters. This mm-hmm. is condensed down. In fact, someone wrote me an email and said, thank you so much for condensing some of my favorite things from Zen Golf. It's as if you got my highlighted copy and just took the highlighted parts and put it in here. So I'd say, as I said, a third of the book is these condensed elements, not straight out of, but adapted the same concepts that I present in Zen Golf in an even more condensed way, and Zen putting as well. There's some chapters on the last section of the book is holing out, which makes sense. That's what you're trying to do at the very end. And so we took some elements that I conveyed in Zen putting, condensed them, and reworded in a one-page way for each tip. And so people can just look through this book and pick out their favorite little tips and take them and apply them. It's not, you don't have to read it from the front to the back.
No, you really don't. And I want to get into, I'll tell you, I repeat your line on the golf course multiple times about you made the putt, you just didn't hole it.
That's right. And that means you can make every putt. We changed the definition.
Mm-hmm.
Holing a putt is the ball going in the hole. That's what we usually think of as making the putt. When somebody says this one's makeable, they think that what they're saying is there's a good chance he's going to be able to hole it, he or she. But what I'm saying is every putt is makeable if you define making the putt as executing the putt you intended. That it comes off the putter with a good feel from the sweet spot. It's rolling in the direction you wanted it to start. And it's moving at the pace you want it to start with. And everybody knows it after the putt's rolled a foot or two, whether that's the putt they intended to make.
Absolutely.
If they did, they made their putt. Then it's like a relay race. After you hand off the baton, all you can do is root for them.
Right. And if it so, and if it ends up an inch short, an inch long, just to the right, whatever, you still made the putt. It just didn't go in the hole.
Right. Right. Now, then two things. If you made the putt, and this is where it really makes a difference. If you feel like you executed the putt you intended, then two things can happen. Either it goes in the hole, or it's so close that you'd putt it exactly the same way again. I like to make a distinction, a different definition for making a putt than people usually use. Traditionally, we say making a putt is the ball going in the hole. I call that holing the putt. Making the putt is executing the putt you intended. Sweet spot strike off the putter, going in the direction you intended, at the pace you intended. And we usually know that after it's rolled a foot or two. We go, yep, that's the putt I wanted to hit. Now, then we get to observe it. If it goes in or comes very, very close, okay, hey, we made the putt and we did the best that we could. And we would probably hit the same putt again because all those blades of grass between our ball and our hole sometimes divert the putt. And if you roll the same putt, the next one might go in. Now, if we miss it by a good deal, then we have a different opportunity. Then we want to say, well, I executed the putt I intended. Why didn't it do what I thought it would do? Now we have an opportunity to learn something. Did I misjudge the speed of the green? Did I misjudge the break or the grain? And you look around and you start to learn. So that if you putt that way, every putt you roll, you get better and better and better at reading greens. To the point where you're going to be looking for all the different influences that could affect a putt. And very rarely misread a green. Then, when you execute the putt, everybody's going to be looking at it and saying, wow, I really thought that had a chance.
Mm-hmm. So it's crazy because that brings me to two more of the chapters in your new book, The Art of the Mental Game, 100 Classic Golf Tips by Dr. Joseph Parent, available on Amazon and iTunes audiobook and audible.com. We'll get into that in a minute. But chapter, well, I don't know which one to do first on this. I think chapter 100 or
okay.
Tip number 100, putting is a guessing game. I thought that was really interesting, but kind of falls into what we're talking about.
Well, it is a guessing game.
Mm-hmm.
You can't know for sure until you've rolled the putt whether you have the correct read. And it's always a combination of path and pace. You know, whenever you read, you're also reading for speed. And there are an infinite number of combinations of speed and break on any kind of breaking putt. So I like people to practice by testing a variety of paths for the breaking putt. Play it as firmly as you dare. I'm going to read from the book just a little bit now. Play it as firmly as you dare with little break. Then try other paths that require less pace but more break until you play the maximum amount of break and the softest pace at which the ball will still make it all the way to the hole. That way you'll discover the most comfortable combination for you. Being more comfortable makes it easier to commit to your read, allowing you to make a more confident stroke. And nothing is more important in golf than confidence. Absolutely. And that's the last sentence of the book.
Oh, what a great way to walk away from the book, too, because it's going to make you just go right back to the beginning. But it's true. I mean, and I it's so weird for me because now after doing this show for this long, I get people calling me and asking me advice. And I'm like, no, I'm not the person you should ask advice. But I always play back to the confidence thing. It's all about your confidence level. And that's why I think I like GPS. That's why I think it's really important to get fitted for your golf clubs. You know,
right.
There's all those elements that as long as it's helping your confidence, you're going to be a better player.
That's exactly right. You know, what you're talking about of knowing the yardage rather than guessing at the yardage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want to go back to classic, because this book is about classic golf and the old style drawings, the other approach would be to learn how to use your eyes and gauge distances on the golf course and go old style. I mean, what about the days when there were no yardages on sprinkler heads and there were no GPS and were no fancy little yardage books? You basically went out and gauged the hole. In the old days, here was the tee, here was the green. There wasn't even a par for the hole. It was how many strokes does it take you to get to the hole versus how many it takes me to get to the hole.
And what a great way to play for so many players.
So here's what
par
I would
par is so unfair.
Well, you know, that's a chapter in the book, both in this book and I talk about it in Zen Golf, about setting up your personal par.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're an 18 handicapper, you can just take that scorecard, cross out whatever it says for par, and add one to it, and write in a new par. And if you play that way, you have a chance to break par.
Right.
But that's your par. That's what's reasonable for you. There won't be any more par threes.
It's crazy because people who've been listening to this show for a while, they now see I'm totally exposed here. I am such a disciple of your stuff because I repeat so many of these things that you're saying. You know, no matter who I'm interviewing, who I'm talking to, and what their take on it is, I always seem to come back to Dr. Joe Parent.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that, Fred.
But I want it now. But there was one, number 96, Watch Your Speed, again, talking about putting. That was such a revelation for me. That was like, oh, you know, because generally I make the ball goes in the hole, I pick it up, I walk away. And I don't spend time, you know, I'm putting my head cover back on, I'm walking back to my clubs, I'm watching the other person do their final putt. I don't do a recap on what I should be doing. Talk to us about Watch Your Speed, about number 96.
Okay, well, the idea on Watch Your Speed is to pay attention not just to the line that you're planning for the putt to take and whether it's uphill or downhill, but actually seeing the speed that the ball is going to go in the hole. So if you're taking a look at the hole on uphill putt, you don't necessarily want it just trickling over the front edge because it can turn away one side or the other as it's approaching the hole. On that one, you want to picture it popping into the back of the hole. On a downhill putt, that you want to just trickling over the front edge. And so it gives you an image of how the ball is going to go in the hole, and that tells your subconscious how big or small a stroke to make with the putter. It's an automatic thing rather than trying to figure out how hard you need to hit it, or, as I say, intentionally making an extra hard stroke. Using your imagination is the best thing for putting and for playing any shot.
Yeah. Pop, pour, or trickle?
That I actually have a
I read a that again. I'm going pop, pour, or trickle.
Or trickle. I actually have a chapter in Zen Putting. You know, the Rice Krispies slogan was snap, crackle, and pop.
Right.
So I have pour, trickle, and pop.
Yeah.
Those are the three ways the ball can go in the hole. As soon as you decide how you want it to go in, on a breaking putt, that's going to tell you how high up on the hole it needs to go in. I mean, if it's trickling in on a big breaking putt, it's coming in just about sideways. Mm-hmm. Well, that tells you how high up, how much break you need to play, how much away from the hole you need to play for the ball to go up the hill and then come back down the hill on the break.
Hmm. Here's another thing that I was shocked about in reading through the book. Number 46, you make a little toss in a line here that most on the tour, that most of the players, they only shoot at about 80% power on most of their shots.
That's correct.
Wow. They're not trying to crush the ball every time. I mean, with the specific club, they're not swinging, you know, at their full capacity?
No, they're not, because what they're trying to do is the combination of distance and accuracy. Mm. And if you go at it with everything, the chances of your timing and your tempo being a little off are much greater than if you're swinging a little bit more under control. Do you want to go into a turn driving your car as fast as you possibly can, or do you want to go into it under control? Now, the interesting analogy I like in driving a car, if you're going into a turn at full speed, what do you need to do to handle the turn? You need to put on the brakes. Mm-hmm. And you actually have less control. It would be like starting your swing, you know, violently and then trying to guide it as you get to the ball, which produces deceleration and a lack of control. Whereas if you're driving a car and you slow down first, and as you go into the curve, you gradually accelerate, you have maximum control driving through that curve. So if you start your swing slowly and accelerate as you're going down and through the ball, you get maximum velocity and maximum control and accuracy.
Hmm. Awesome. So good.
Smoother, more consistent swing, and you control the direction better, and you actually hit the ball more solidly. And this is something else I mention in this chapter. Off-center impact costs you more yardage than a slightly slower swing speed.
Wow.
Don't think most golfers know that.
That's really interesting, yeah.
The value of hitting it on the sweet spot with your driver is going to gain you more yardage than a slightly off-center hit at a few miles an hour faster swing.
Oh, we should walk away with that one. That's good.
Put the middle of the face on the, you know, the sweet spot of the face on the ball.
Hmm. You working with any pros these days?
On the PGA Tour, mostly with Tim Petrovic.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm out on tour, every now and again, another golfer comes up and asks me a question or two. We have a little session, but on a regular basis, I spend time with Tim. And on the ladies tour, Christy Kerr.
Wow, U.S. Open champion?
Yes, I did a little work with Julie Inkster as well last year, primarily on putting. But Christy, we have a regular working relationship to get her to become what I think she has the potential to be, and that is the best golfer in the world. She's already ranked in the top two or three. But I think she can dominate the tour the same way that Annika did and the same way that Lorena did for a couple of years.
Well, she just needs your help, and she will.
We're working together. We're a great team. And she has been very, very generous and gracious in her expressions of appreciation.
Oh, that's nice.
And that means a lot to me.
That's very nice. Well, Dr. Joe, this is making me crazy because I have so many more questions. I even have a list of questions supplied by listeners about the mental game questions that I wanted to ask you. We have a members-only episode next week. Could you spend some more time with us and answer the questions then? And it's been
happy to do that for your members.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Again, let's tell everybody about the new book. It's called Golf, The Art of the Mental Game, 100 Classic Golf Tips by Dr. Joseph Parent. And it's available at many sources, including an audio book, which you can download at either audible.com or at iTunes.
Sadly, the audiobook won't have the drawings, but it will have my 100 tips.
Well, you should have. You know, if you have an extensive golf library in your home, this is a must. If you have a very limited golf library, a lot of things, you don't like to have a lot of books that you know, go over the mechanics of golf swings, you should have this book. This is one of those books that's going to help you in so many different ways. And I love it. Again, I'm just a big fan.
Well,
I'm a fanboy of Dr. Joe Parent, and we'll have you come back again next week.
Appreciate it. And I'm happy to answer people's questions if they want to send a note along to me at they can contact me at zengolf.com.
Well, and the easiest way, and they know that we have a lot of success with this, if you just want to go click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Ah, perfect.
And send it to me. I will forward it to Dr. Joe, and he'll respond to both of us. And then what I sometimes do is take those questions and answers and post them on our blog.
Great idea.
Just
let's
to share it with everybody.
Way. Let's go through your website, and people can reach me that way very, very easily. Happy to answer some questions. And I really think that it's a special opportunity. The drawings in this book are really incredible, and they're rare and not easily found elsewhere. So I think your listeners will enjoy it a lot.
And definitely think about as a gift. You should definitely. It's a great gift book.
Thanks a lot, Fred.
Thank you, Dr. Joe. We close each episode with a quote that is sometimes funny, sometimes relevant, but my main goal for the quotes was to find great lines that you can take to the course to help, as Dr. Joe would say, keep you from getting in your own way. So we close with a quote from the new book, Golf, The Art of the Mental Game, by Dr. Joe Parent. And this quote is by Jack Nicklaus, who once said, "I never hit a shot without having a clear picture of it in my mind. I see where I want the ball to finish. I see the path, trajectory, and how it will land. I see the kind of swing that will produce that shot. Only then do I address the ball." Next week, for Members Only, Part 2 with Dr. Joe Parent, answering your mental game questions. If you have any questions, comments, suggestions, or quotes, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.